Testing 1, 2, 3. Guess it's working, huh? I want to tell you a story for the message, and not sure exactly where I'm going to go with this, but I definitely believe I'm supposed to tell you this story. And be patient with me if I'm a little rattled this morning. I don't do well with no or little sleep. But a story that we experienced on our trip that very much, I think, applies to all of us. I really believe that we had a spiritual breakthrough in Mission Parlefois, Faith Missions, which is an arm of our ministry here. As most of you know, I've been given the privilege of leading here. And then in this outreach, I've been asked to oversee as international president for Mission Parlefois, which means mission by faith. In English, obviously, we say faith missions. Had some real challenges. And as I've gone along, it's made more sense to me. To be perfectly, totally honest, it didn't make total sense to me at first. I feared people being disappointed in my judgment. I prayed 3 months when I was offered the position of being president, international president for Faith Missions. This is 10,000 attendees, 58 churches, 115 preachers, 16 district pastors, and 9 schools. And I prayed about that for 3 months, and I felt God spoke to me directly and said, "Don't question me. You just take a step of faith, and I want you to do this." And I didn't know if it was a short period of time, long period of time, or what it was. Obviously, I had emotional ties to it because my father was in Haiti for 23 years. And my son was interested at that point in going and being a missionary, which he and Abby and the children have gone, as you know. But I battled with that tremendously because I thought there's going to be people that we've known for years and have supported us. They're going to think, man, this guy's losing his mind. You know, this guy's losing his mind doing this. What in the world is he thinking? But I really felt very definitely that God told me I was to do that. And in my year off in 2011, God had told me numerous times that I was to influence the influencers and that I had a new role and that God had developed me, and certainly I have a long ways to go, but God had developed me to a point where he wanted me to begin backing other people and help develop them. So that part of it made sense because when I visited Haiti for the first time, I observed the leadership in Haiti and I thought, oh my goodness gracious, this is a mess. As I went the first couple times, I said, oh Lord, what have I gotten into here? Oh my goodness gracious, what have I gotten into? You know, these guys are not spiritually mature at all. They lack guidance. They're very prideful. Very prideful. Daddy always used to say that. That's hard. When you think of the poverty in a country like that, you think, well, how could you be prideful? Just hang out there a while. They're very, very prideful. And in their leadership especially, they're very prideful. There's a caste system to a degree, even though it's not as defined as India. It's definitely present. There's a caste system in Haiti. And I'm going somewhere with this, and it'll apply to us too, so hang with me. You know, it's a big deal to become, they have preachers, which we call pastors. Then they have pastors, which we would call district superintendents. So there's 16 district pastors, and under those districts, there's preachers in 58 churches. And God had called me to give leadership to these pastors and the national committee that runs the Haitian church. And I'm like, Lord, I know you told me to do this, but oh my goodness, this is what a challenge. And to be honest with you, the first couple times over, I battled a little bit with depression, even though I enjoyed the services and excitement of all of that and reminiscing of seeds that my dad had sown and mom and enjoying some of the fruit of that. Yet when I saw the leadership, there was lack of integrity. I mean, I'm going to be real open with you. The schools not run properly, people not being honest about funds, and these people are pastors. And not all of them, but I mean, there was dishonesty, there was lack of integrity, and they certainly didn't understand servant leadership. Let the greatest among you be in a servant. They don't get that at all. It's about carrying a briefcase, and I'm important now, and everybody serves me. Kind of a caste system, and the mountain people and the rural people of Haiti are refreshing to be around. It's awesome to go to a service and hear them sing. But I saw big problems in the leadership. Big problems. And I thought, Lord, how do I get across to them, the greatest among you be the servant? When I went over to help fix up Kevin and Abby's house and took Guy and Kevin Summers with me, and we spent 8 days over there working on it, they were upset terrible at me putting in the toilet. I'm a minister from the States. I'm not to touch the plumbing. I'm to give orders. And I fussed with them about it. I said, no, I'm putting in the toilet. Jess was in working on the other part, Kevin Summers over there, and I was putting in the toilet. And plus, it had been broken all to pieces, and the cement was cracked, and I wasn't sure how it would be put in otherwise, and I had an idea that I thought would work and brought stuff with me, but they were upset. In fact, Pastor John scolded me, and I said, no, I'm putting in the toilet. And, you know, I wasn't supposed to do that. I'm at a level, see, where I'm not supposed to do that in their thinking. And I began saying, Lord, we got some real challenges here. We got some real challenges here. We got to start with the leadership. And then I felt like God began saying to me, that's why I put you here. You're not supposed to oversee these 10,000 people, but you are supposed to affect these 16 guys, their district. Influence the influencers. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. So I began making friends with them. Well, what was neat is that at the end of the first week, John, who had chewed me out, actually jumped in and began helping me on the roof and on some projects. And, of course, some of the other Haitians are like, what's he doing up there, you know? He's supposed to have his briefcase and be setting and giving orders. So, some real challenges. Lack of accountability, lack of integrity. And the fearful thing is that people will become what you are. One man said that if you pastor 10 years, the people will become what you are. And so if you pastor a church for 10 years and you say this church is a mess, you need to look in the mirror. Because leadership is mimicked down to the Kroger's used to say that the attitude of the manager is reflected clear down to the bag boys, the sack of groceries. And I've seen that. So my fear was, what's the Haitian church going to be if this is the issue with the leaders? And there's a national committee that runs, I'm going somewhere with this, stay with me. The national committee that runs it is 9 members, and Pastor Picard is over them. That's his last name, Picard. And so We had our work cut out for us. Last fall, some issues began to come up, indictments against Pastor Picard, and pretty significant things, not moral issues, but some upset, and I was getting emails and feedback about problems with Pastor Picard. And Evans, I'm going to rush through this part, but I'm definitely going somewhere with this, and it applies to you and me. Evidence began building. Several things were mishandled, handled very poorly. There was a pastor, for example, a district man, pastor, that I was told he wasn't honest. And I drilled him on that when I was there last fall. And he is not honest. And they cite several examples, and it was pretty significant. And they asked me, they said, we want him out. What do you tell us? You're our international president. What is your advice? And I said, well, if you would not trust him to live next to him, if that's the, and I drilled him on that, because there's cultural differences and language barriers. You know, I have very good interpreters. If you are saying to me that character, leadership's about character, and if you're saying to me that living next to this man, you would not trust him, and that you believe he's dishonest, you need to remove him from that position. You know, we don't have to spend hours talking about that. Well, when I came back home, they did remove him from the position. But then the president, when he came under fire for making that decision, rather than saying it was his idea, he said, I made him do it. See what I mean? Lack of courage. That's a weakness in leadership, lack of courage, and so then division began to develop. Oh, some of them believe that. Some of them said, oh, the guy that's the new president's the one that did it. So this pastor, he's got his, they're choosing sides, and this is just one incident, folks, this is just one. So he's all upset because the president from the States made him do that, where this president was not being totally honest. He was manipulating the situation. The truth is that he lacked the courage to stick by his decision when the heat was on in the kitchen. He buckled, and so he had to blame somebody, so it was my idea. My answer was, how would I have known? And they all just stared at me, and they hadn't thought about that. I thought, I don't know the language. How would I have known about this guy? I learned it from you. So a lot of things were building. I'll not take time for all that. But a lot of things built with Pastor Picard, and division began to develop. Long story short, 8 of the 9 men on the national committee who run the whole thing in Haiti, 8 of the 9 men wanted Pastor Picard to step down. Well, if I have 9 people on my CMO board and 8 of them want me to step down, I probably should step down. That's pretty high percentage. And knowing the evidence, I confronted him in February. And we had a big showdown. Tom Offutt, this is what you saw on my face. Tom came to me a number of months ago, and he said, "You're troubled about something." Well, you can't always tell everything. Some things you've promised to keep to yourself. But I was troubled because I recognized God had put me in a position to influence the influencers, and that the seeds that had been planted over the years by missionaries, Robert Recour, who founded the mission and died at 38 years old in a plane crash, my father's 23 years, there's a lot at stake, and these leaders, now we got war, and there's 2 sides, and 8 of the 9 on the national committee want the Picard to step down, but Picard has a lot of influence with the area churches, and they all like him, and so guess what? Everybody's choosing up sides and getting ready to have war. So when I got there in February, my oh my, was the tension high. To some, I was a blessing from the sky, and to others, I was a curse word. So I've always dealt with things head on, sat down and had an open talk with Pastor Picard. And I told him that I felt he was manipulative. I told him that he had poor follow-through, but that I loved him dearly and I would like to help develop him, but that he lacked courage, and when he lacked courage, he crossed over into dishonesty to cover himself. And I said that I thought the best thing for the future of the mission would be for him to admit those things and to step down. He refused. I went back home. The tension built more. In the meantime, another man on the national committee decides he's going to be president. So he begins campaigning and seeking followers. And so I'm getting word from everywhere that this other guy wants to take, and I like this other guy, but I don't agree with hostile takeovers in churches. And I told my brother-in-law, Jesse, who's on the board, I said, "Jesse, we're in a really awkward position because we are unhappy with how Pastor Picard is operating as a leader, but the guy who wants to take his place is doing hostile takeover, and that's no good." So war broke out between the 2 sides, and Pastor Picard refused to step down. In the meantime, I met with a Haitian guy here in the States who knows the situation well, Eddie Bazile, who was here at the conference. He lives in Fort Wayne. He grew up in Haiti. He knows these pastors, grew up among them. And he said he needed to talk with me, and actually I initiated talking with him, and he said yes, he would like to talk with me. He had some things to share. I'm going somewhere with this. Stay with me. This will be good for you too. It's not just a story about Haiti. So I met with Eddie, and Eddie said, "I have been talking on the phone with Pastor Picard." And I said, "Well, good. We won't have language barriers, and we won't have to use computers to translate, because that can be dangerous, because it's not always real clear. Have a person, of course, when I'm in Haiti, to translate for me." But he said, "Pastor Picard is very hurt by you personally." Of course, that got my attention. I said, "Really?" And he said, "The manner in which you do in the States," he said, Eddie said, "Haitians are very prideful." Hello. I saw that for sure. He said, "Haitians are very prideful, and your openness might work here, but he was very offended by you. In fact, he said that he felt like you pulled off all of his feathers. Every one of his feathers, and left him naked for this other guy to attack." Ooh, that went pretty deep with me. So I went my walk by the river, and I said, "Lord, I believe you called me into this." I prayed, bathed every step in prayer. Why is this going so backwards? Now this leader who won't step down and is refusing to step down says that I personally have hurt him very deeply, that he loved me when he first met me, but that I've pulled all of his feathers out and left him naked for the other guy to attack, and he's very hurt. And I felt God spoke to me very, very clearly 3 weeks ago and said, "I want you to go and kneel before him and tell him that you are sorry that you hurt him." I waited a few days, asked the Lord again, Lord, I want to test the spirits to see if they be of God. Is this what you want me to do? Because these things I confronted him about are integrity issues. And he could easily translate that into, oh, well, he's taken back everything he said. I said, Lord, this could go a lot of directions. I could look incapable, and therefore, that's fine. I don't mind being humbled. But if I'm incapable, then that will hurt confidence in me in the future. I can look like I switched horses in midstream. I can look terribly inexperienced and unqualified for the job. Plus, the other side was furious that I was going to go talk with him. When I told the other side that I needed to go talk to Pastor Picard, they, no, that's a mistake. Absolutely not. You should not. That'll just complicate the problem. And I felt God kept speaking to me and saying, go talk to Pastor Picard. So we flew to Haiti a week and a half ago. Went before the Lord again. Got up 3 in the morning. Lord, what am I supposed to do? I felt like God said, go talk to Pastor Picard. I said, Kevin, I'm going to go talk to Pastor Picard. I said, these people are against me doing this. I can see what they're thinking, but I know I'm hearing the voice of God. I know I'm supposed to go talk to this man. And Kevin said, do you care if I go with you? I'd like to hear what he says. Because Kevin was upset at him, too. He said, I'd like to hear what he says about some of these things. And I said, that's fine. You can go. So we picked a neutral interpreter, because that became a problem. You had people that wanted to interpret for you, but they're on the other side. So you're not sure that they're interpreting for you correctly. Okay. Again, the guy running against him was furious with me. You know, this is muddying the water in his terms. He didn't use the word muddy the water, but this is muddying the water. You know, we need to impeach him. We need to get him out of there. We need to get going the right direction. All these things we want to do for the mission, we can't do it with him in there. I felt like God kept saying to me, did you know you got to listen to God? Yes, in a multitude of counselors, there's safety. Yes, there's times to go to people and seek counsel, but there's sometimes that God speaks to your own heart and everybody thinks you're wrong, but you've got to listen to God. There's sometimes you know in your knower, and that's found by a strong prayer life. And that applies to anyone. Well, he's a pastor, so no. God's no respecter of persons in relationship. There's order and roles that God puts, but in relationship, he's no respecter of person. So Kevin and I and our interpreter went over to Pastor Picard's house. Stay with me. This is sweet. God's doing something bigger that you don't see. I'm supposed to influence the influencers. There's a stronghold of pride in the Haitian pastors, a stronghold. A stronghold of pride. Scripturally, there's a stronghold of pride. Man, that's got to be broken. And I went to Pastor Picard's house. Had no idea how he'd be received. He had one of his boys sitting over here in the corner that's on his side to kind of monitor the whole situation. And I went over and I knelt down on one knee in front of him and I took his hand. And I had a great interpreter. And I talked to the interpreter ahead of time to make clear that we had concepts understood clearly. And I said, I'm not here to talk about the pastor that you moved and who you blamed. I'm not here to talk about the building plans that you changed. I'm not here to talk about it. And I took a list, like I did in the service with you folks, and I wrote everything on there of all the indictments that we'd had against Pastor Picard, and I tore it up in little pieces. And I took him by the hand, and I said, Eddie told me that I hurt you and pulled out all your feathers and humiliated you and let the other man attack you when you were naked without your feathers. I said, I did not intend to do that. In the States, we're very open. I have a board. I just tell them how I feel. I encourage my congregation. I'm understanding that in your culture, that isn't something that you receive very well. And tears came up my eyes, and he saw it, and I saw him begin to study me, and something changed in his eyes, and I made him take my hand, and I looked him in the eye, and I said, will you forgive me? And he said he would. And then I tore up that list that I referred to a second ago, and I tore it up in little pieces. And I said, you men need to decide Saturday who's going to be president, and you have to decide that among yourselves. I have no desire to control that. But I said, with you, I want you to know that I love you, and you're my friend, and I'm sorry that I hurt you. There was a strong presence of God in that room. I left, still not sure what all this meant. And Pam said, this isn't going to be received very well. She was before me. She was behind me. But she said, this isn't going to be received very well. And I said, I know it. But God spoke to me and said, to do my will, are you willing to be criticized? Are you be willing to even be viewed as a betrayer? Because the other side felt like I had betrayed them. But I knew that God said that. And I went home, and I said, Lord, I know you gave me this, and I know you told me to do it, and it hasn't been easy. But there's something you're doing that I'm missing. But I had a peace knowing that I had talked to that man, and I told him I was sorry. 2 days later, he called a meeting of the entire pastor's group and preachers and stood up and told them that he was in the wrong and that it was all his fault, and could he wash all of their feet? A stronghold was broken, but God wanted me to model it. What am I saying to you? Sorry, I cry extra when I have any sleep. This didn't glorify Tom. Please don't take it that way. But if I hadn't been willing to humble myself, we wouldn't have broken that stronghold. Your prayers for me caused me to hear, listen, everybody's just as important. It ain't about somebody's the big dog. No, your prayers gave me the courage to stand on my own 2 feet even though everybody defied me and listened to God. And it broke a stronghold. I couldn't believe what he said. He said to them, this is all my fault. And he went around the room to the national committee and asked them to forgive him. And he didn't literally do it, but he said, if you wanted me to, I would be willing to wash each of your feet. Guess what they started doing? One by one, they got up and went over to him. I'm sorry for what I said about you. Pastor John, Mike's dad, went over to him. Pastor John is a hard sell, buddy. He's a wonderful guy, but man, he's strong-willed. He went over and said, I forgive you. Will you forgive me? And they hugged each other. Everybody in the room hugged each other and cried, and a stronghold was broken. And when I went back to my room, I'm like, influence the influencer. I thought I was supposed to be such a good leader and try so hard that maybe they would copy me. No, you wanted to put me in a situation and make me back up because they won't ever do it. And when I modeled that, it broke something. Right now, we have people all over the mission telling each other they're sorry. It's trickling down. But it started with the leaders. How does this apply to you? It does. What situation in your family or in your home do you hold a key to? I ain't nobody, pardon my English, I ain't nobody, but I'm not stupid, and I know that I held a key in that situation. My son Kevin said to me, he said, Dad, what you did in that room that night when you knelt down in front of him triggered everything that happened after that. I'm asking you, what do you have in your family that you hold the key to? What do you have in your workplace or your community that you hold the key to? There's a stronghold in your family or in your community, and you need to initiate something, and God will take it from there. And the ripple effect will be incredible. Does that make sense? Pride stands in our way. I wonder how many families would be healed if a father stepped up and said, I want to have a family meeting. A lot of this is my fault. A lot of this is my fault. I wonder how many marriages be healed if a husband or wife would sit down and say, yes, there's a list on both sides. We definitely had some indictments. I wouldn't go over to a foreign country and have a confrontation like I did in February if we didn't have some valid indictments with Pastor Picard. Come on, you know me better than that. I'm about grace and mercy. I mean, there was some stuff that was ridiculous. He needed confronted. But then there was a time to tear it up and model forgiveness, which triggered him saying, it's all my fault. I don't think it's all his fault. He took more blame than I expected. But it broke a stronghold. Does that make sense? And I wonder, in families and homes, the healing that could come if somebody would step up and say, you know what? Yeah, I got a valid list here, but I'm tired of writing stuff down. I've been keeping lists too long. Let's tear that stupid thing up. A lot of this is my fault, and I am sorry. And it'll break a stronghold. But I believe people will stumble into hell with their pride because they ain't going to do it. They ain't going to do it. And I've come to a place I'm like, Lord, if I have to look stupid, it's okay. If I have to look stupid, if it's about your kingdom. And I believe God walked me into that confrontation and made it a strong one in February, because if it hadn't been a strong confrontation, the back down wouldn't have meant as much. You see what I mean? So I believe with all of my heart, those indictments weren't wrong, and I think in the future now he's more open to that. I could see Picard going back and rereading the list in his mind that I tore up and saying, you know what, I've grown to love that pastor from the States, and I need to think about what he said to me. See, the ground's open then, because it's broken open. And I need to tell you that in the last meeting we had with the whole assembly there, at the end of the meeting, I needed to leave, and I walked over to him. They were going to talk about a few more things which wouldn't pertain to me, and I went over, and he's president, and I said, Pastor Picard, may I be excused? And which I don't need to ask him that, but I wanted to honor him. I said, may I be excused? And he took my hand, and he can't say very many English words. And when I took his hand, he didn't let go. And I looked him in the eye just like I am you, Hollis, and he said, I love you. Isn't that awesome? That he could receive that, that a stronghold could be broken, and then the relationship be restored. Do you know that if we'll use the key God gives us, he can fix the whole mess? He can fix the whole mess. I cry because I believe that there are numerous situations where tremendous healing could come if we'd step up. And I believe strongholds can be broken. I leave you with that question. What do you hold the key to? And God has to speak to your own heart. I come here before you with no agenda. What do you hold a key to? What stronghold are you a key to? And what would God say to you? 2 Corinthians 10. Most guys read their text at the beginning. I'm reading it at the end. The weapons we fight are not weapons of this world. The weapons we fight with are not weapons of this world. On the contrary, they have divine power to the pulling down of strongholds. We don't use the weapons the world uses. The world says, by George, I'm not giving in. I demand my rights. I'll give up your rights. God will fight for you. I don't owe him a thing. I didn't do a thing wrong, Dad. Burn it. I'm not going to go in there and say I did. Oh, get over it. Go ahead. If they ask you to go a mile, go the second one. Lay it out there. Jesus never did a thing wrong. He was sinless, and he laid himself out to die and pay the penalty for our sins. Man, can I back up? Can I back up a little bit? If Jesus can lay it all out there, can I back up a little bit? God showed me once again the power in pulling down a stronghold if we'll humble ourselves. I close. Thank you for your prayers. It's a reason why we need 21 people in the prayer circle when we go to Haiti. It's intense stuff. But I believe that we could very well be on the brink of a revival in faith missions in Haiti. And there's 10,000 attendees in 58 churches. I believe these leaders are seeing some things they haven't seen before. And we got a style of leadership they're not used to. And Kevin's a great contributor to that too. Kevin ain't about being the big dog. Kevin's willing to jump in and do whatever needs to be helped. And they all like him. They really like him. I don't know how many men I had say, I like your son. I like your son. Because they're not used to that. Boy, it's about carrying a briefcase and you're a big important guy and everybody serves you, you know. That's not what we're about. And I think what we've experienced here in realness and honesty and leadership, God is now saying, share that with a place that doesn't understand that at all. And I'll do some mighty things. And we won't have to be all involved. Oh, we'll help out. But they get things going right from the top. They'll accomplish a lot themselves. They don't need me preaching over there. Shoot, I need an interpreter. But they can't be preaching out of tainted hearts. I got to influence influencers and let them preach. I got no desire to do that. People say, you're going to move over there? Heavens, no. I can't. 8 days, I want out of there. Good night. That's the most overwhelming place. I always look forward to going. I honestly, look, Pam said that too. She said she's excited about going to Haiti. But man, after 8 days, we'll say, where's the plane? Let's get out of here. Allie, you know what we're talking about, don't you? My sister Miriam said this Port au Prince was the closest thing to hell she'd ever seen. That's the honest truth. Miriam's a very godly woman. She said, this is the closest thing to hell I've ever seen. And of course, John takes us to some of the worst sections. And when we go there, he's good about it. I want to see it as it is. But rural Haiti, Daddy used to say there's two Haitis. There's the city, and then there's the rural Haiti. Rural Haiti, there's a lot of hunger for God. And they're very America-friendly, and they're very open. But they got to have leadership that understands who Jesus is. And so we want to model that. Let's stand for prayer. I told you I'd get you out early today. It's 11:28. It's 2 minutes before normal. See, I kept my word. Lord, thank you for giving me energy and collectedness, if that's a word, on a day when I didn't get much sleep. And we've been really, a lot of intense things going on. Thank you for the privilege last night of being with Bill's family. Lord, be with them right now as we stand together here. May your hand be on them. May your Holy Spirit comfort them. Take these truths, Lord. I would ask that you would use this. I believe that there's a reason I was tell that story today. I don't know what it is, but I believe there is a reason. And I believe that there are people here that in their heart of hearts, they know they hold the key to something. I know of a family not present here today. But I know of a family right now that the hearts are so tender that if the father would humble himself and say he was wrong, I think there'd be a crying spell in that family. It's a huge family. There'd be a crying spell in that family like we've not seen if he would do that, if he would say, I'm sorry. Lord, help us to be about the Father's business and to be willing to humble ourselves. And I'd ask as we leave here on a busy Memorial weekend that we'll not forget what God said to us in this service. Lord, on a whole different note, I'd ask your blessing on the servicemen, ex-servicemen among us. And Memorial weekend's a time we think about all that. And we wouldn't be here and have the freedom to speak truth if it were not for men and women who have put their life on the lines. We thank you for that. Lord, those that aren't here today that need to hear this sermon, cause them to, as Joe makes the CDs, to get a CD, or I feel like there's other people that need to hear what was said today. Cause it to get into the hands of those that that need that. In Jesus' name, amen. I want to say one thing about CDs. Joe has taken over doing CDs, and I really appreciate his help. He thought he was retiring. We got him so busy. Don't hesitate to give out CDs. I'm not saying that because I was the one sharing this morning, but I think there's truth we share here that sometimes God will speak to you and say, you know what, that would be good for so-and-so. That family, oh man, that would be good for them. Don't hesitate. Joe makes